Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the end of the first term. Come on, it's been fun. And we've done a lot. We've done a lot. We've done 18 psukim, including an intro of Megillas Esther. And I've got to do an intro for tonight based upon what we did as an outro last time. This is so important, what I've got to tell you. Okay, really, really important. We just got to the end of the 18th pasuk last time. And we were focused on this concept of Vashti. Now listen very carefully, because this is really important. Listen very, very carefully to me. The Midrash is saying that the relationship between Ahasuerus and Vashti was a blueprint for the relationship between God and Israel. And everything that happened between Ahasuerus and Vashti was happening between God and Israel, which is why it's got to be read so carefully what's going on with Vashti. Listen to me. Do you remember there was the whole Vashti Malka Vashti business? Is she Queen Vashti? Is she Vashti the Queen? And then she said, "Ach, I'm from three generations. I got Belshazzar, Nebuchadnezzar, and he was the head of the army of Satan Cheruv, and I am really more." You remember all that? And then he sent the chamberlains, and it went wrong. And the Mamuchan said, "You can't do that. You got to kill her." And he didn't listen to all the other advisors. Listen, God is calling Klal Yisrael like Ahasuerus called on Vashti. And God calls us, as it were, Israel, his queen. And we say, no, we're the queen Israel. Why? Vashti descended three generations. We also have three generations, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And of our own right, we are intrinsically important. And Ahasuerus says, no, it's not Belshazzar, Sancheiriv, Nebuchadnezzar, all that business. You're only the queen because you married to me. Says Hashem to Klal Yisrael, don't think yourself so choshev because you come from Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov and the Shvatim. You're only choshev because you're married to me. Now come to me. And Vashti says, I'm not going to come to you because what happens if you don't think that I'm pretty anymore? And it will ruin the whole plot. And Ahasuerus says, don't worry, I still think you're beautiful. Hashem is telling us to come back to him in tshuva. And we're saying, no, we won't come back to tshuva because what happens if you don't think I'm comely with virtue anymore? You're not going to think I'm pretty. And so Hashem says, don't worry, I find you fair. Like Ahasuerus said to Vashti, don't worry, you're still beautiful in my eyes. You're going to wear the crown. So too, Hashem says, don't worry, you're still my wife. You have a royal mamleches kohuna status. Come back to me in tshuva. And Vashti still said no. When Vashti said no, Mamuchan pipes up. Who's Mamuchan? Mamuchan's Haman. He's a Malek. And who's the guardian angel of a Malek? The Satan. The whole thing's a moshul. So what's going on? Mark, you just come in. Listen, so Vashti's Klal Yisrael. Ahasuerus is the king. The king turns round to Vashti and says, come and dance for me. She says, no, you're not going to think I'm pretty. I.e., come and do tshuva for me. No, you're not going to think I'm pretty anymore. And if I wear the crown, it's only a bestowed thing from you. I want to feel as if I'm personally choshev myself. You're not personally choshev, even from Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. You're just my wife and you're only my wife in that sense. Does that make sense? Now, Mamuchan, the archangel in charge of Mamuchan, is the Satan. And the Satan pipes out saying, oh, how much more of this are you going to take from Vashti? How much more of this are you going to take from Klal Yisrael? You should kill this woman. This woman's nothing been a problem for you from the get-go. And he's like, oh no, yeah, you're right, it's a problem. So he writes out a decree based upon this advisor. So too, a Kodesh Baruch Hu writes out a decree based upon the prosecutor in heaven. And then Ahasuerus relents and he goes, oh, my beautiful Vashti. I love Vashti. Can I not get her off the hook? Hashem relents. I love Klal Yisrael. Can I get her off the hook? Can you see everything that's happening with Vashti and Ahasuerus is an analogy for everything that's happening between Klal Yisrael and Kodesh Baruch Hu? That's what's going on. It's all hidden in this. This is one relationship. That's why you've got to understand Vashti. If you don't understand what's happening with Vashti, you're not going to chapshat what's going on with Klal Yisrael. Anytime the word Hamelech is mentioned in the Megillah without Hamelech Ahasuerus, it's always talking about the King of Kings, says the Medrash Rabbah. It's an allusion to God himself. The relationship of Ahasuerus and Vashti was the relationship of Ahasuerus, of all of his, we're his wife, we're the king's wife. Esther is a change of Klal Yisrael into a different form. The wife is replaced with a better wife, a wife full of tshuva. Vashti was Klal Yisrael's form prior to doing tshuva. She was haughty and insolent and gaivadik. Oh, I'm from three generations, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I've got news for you. That doesn't help you. You've still got to do tshuva. Notice Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, when they were called on by Eliyahu Navi to help and assist, they couldn't help. They said, what can we do? Put our hands in the air. What can we do? They've gone to avoid a czar. What can we do? So your three generations that Vashti's calling on, the king says is worth nothing. You're only Vashti Hamalka. The only reason you have any royalty is you're linked to me. Klal Yisrael, your only chashivas is you're binding to me. Don't go around looking for other things externally. Come back to me. That's where we left off last week. You've got to hold on to that the entire time. What's going on with the king, his wife, is always what's going on with Hashem and us. Again, though, this had to be written for Persians and Medians to read at the time and had to be encrypted in a cipher that only Klal Yisrael would understand. So there was a woman called Vashti. She really was a woman called Vashti. She really existed. However, there was also the illusion taking place between the discord between husband and wife, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Klal Yisrael. And there really was a writ of death written against Vashti. There really was a writ of death written against Klal Yisrael. It's not a joke. And there really was Hashem relenting, saying, what am I going to do? Get him off the hook. So too, and there really was a Mamuch and a Ham and a Sotan going, come on, let's get, this is our chance. All of this divine energy is playing out in the Psukim of Ahasuerus and Vashti. You've got to read it like that. Really shakes you. No wonder we have to read all this stuff before we get to Mordechai, who's coming up in the next few psukim, because you've got to understand what's going on upstairs. We're in chapter 1, verse 19. Imal HaMelech Tov. If it please... Now, this was mamish. These are the words of Haman. This is like reading the words of Himmler. Of Himmler, imagine in a Third Reich meeting, listen to how he's approaching the king. It's the mamish like the Sotan talking. Be very careful how you read his words. Everyone is slippery and covered in grease. You can't hold on to it. They're all very, it's a political diplomacy here. He was a very skilled politician. Mamuchan did not get where he got to without being a skilled diplomat. Look at these words. If it pleases the king, let a royal decree be issued, or to Yetzer, to go out, to emanate, to dispatch, to exit, from before him, from before the king. So Memuchan is telling Ahasuerus, he isn't saying what he thinks is a good idea, he's telling the king what he should think is a good idea. You hear that? He's a politician telling the prime minister that it's definitely a good idea to do this act. But really, it's not the it's not the Prime Minister's idea. It's this diplomat's idea. And let it be incorporated all the way into the constitution of Perdian Mesia. Put it in as one of the founding pillars of our nation. Freedom, liberty, access to health care, and that a man should be honoured by his wife. And not be transgressed that Vashti, he didn't call her the queen, he demoted her to purely some woman. Vashti, notice he had it in for her, he wanted her out the way to allow him to ascend politically in the power structure of Persian media. heaven. Notice the Sotan wants Klal Yisrael out of the way to allow him to ascend the power structure in heaven. It's all happening in front of us. That Vashti stroke Klal Yisrael, if you're reading it on that dual level, never again appear before King Ahasuerus. Now, this means Ahasuerus directly. And that the king hand over her royal station. That's Klal Yisrael's royal station, if you want to read it on that level. Because just as the king, to another who's better than she. Let's usurp the people of Israel. Now, notice Haman was using this to get Vashti out the way so he could get on with killing the Jews. He needs her out of the way because she's a political opponent like a chess ball. Did you know chess was invented in Persia, from what I understand? And you know, the queen is the most important player. We've got, and she's a dangerous queen because she's got her own mind, right? I need her out the way if I'm going to become prime minister. You know, I need to get her, you know, this is like a political move, you know. Sorry, it's nothing personal, you know what the mafia say. It's nothing personal. We just need to kill you because you're in the, it's business, you know what I mean? Let's get rid of her and we'll find you better. We'll find you better than Vashti. There is so much slipperiness in verse 19. What's going on? The phrase, Yetzer Davar Malchus, let a royal decree be issued or dispatched, go out from, before the kingship, can be understood literally. The matter of royalty will go out to the people. So it means, posh pshat, the matter of royalty, that is that Vashti is called by her royal title, this royal problem. You know, we've had it in our generation has had, what's it, Meghan and Harry, stripped of their royal titles. They're not now princes and dukes and duchesses or whatever. They're now just making a hat. They're stripped of their royal titles. That can happen. And now we're just going to call her Vashti. The queen has gone. She thought herself a queen. We're going to prove it to her. She's no queen. And that should go up before the king. Everyone should know her name's Vashti now. In the papers, we're calling them Harry and Meghan Lahavdil. We're not calling them Prince Harry and Prince. We're not doing that. We're just calling them Harry and Meghan to tell them they're no longer royal. And she should never again be called a queen. Stripper of a royal title. Rather, let a royal decree be issued that Vashti never again appear. That is, she should be simply Vashti without any further title. Now, it's like this. Chazal tell us the most beautiful idea. I need to give you an analogy to understand what the problem is. Pretend there are two brothers, or I don't know, a relationship. Two brothers are fighting, bitterly fighting. And a third party jumps in to try to save the day by siding with one of the brothers. So there's brother A and there's brother B. Let's say they're arguing over something. And someone comes in and says, oh, brother A is right. Brother B, you should capitulate. Now later, after brother A and B have made peace between each other, brother B hates the third party who sided with brother A. Does that make sense? The third party who jumps in to help resolve the quarrel did so at brother B's expense. So brother B, even though the quarrel is over and he loves brother A now, he hates the third party who sided against him to finish the quarrel off. He's like an enemy. Does that make sense? Is everyone okay with that? That's the analogy. Memuchan was afraid of entering into this kind of dangerous situation when he became involved in this whole Vashti business. He knew he's got to win whatever happens. And if you have a situation where brothers are fighting and, you know, even if it calms down, you're going to end up being hated by one of them. If one of them is one of the most powerful people in the world, you've got a problem. So how did he slickly avoid this problem? He said like this. He doesn't really know if the king's going to accept his advice. And maybe he'll, you know, because of his love for Vashti, he'll just reinstate her against his wishes, against Mukhan's advice. And that would mean that Vashti is going to hate Mukhan's guts, right? Which will make him public enemy number one, considering that we know that he had seven advisors, King Khashrosh. Mukhan was listed last. Mukhan was listed at the end. He was listed at the end, which means what? He was the least important of all seven, as we'll learn. He wants to ascend to the top advisory. He wants to go to the top of the cabinet. He's right on the outside, and Vashti is a dangerous player. So he wants her out. So he did three things. People, listen, he did three things. Number one, he did not enact the decree himself, but he merely advised the king to do so. Let the king write this. It says, if it pleases the king, let a royal decree be issued from before him. That is, let the king be the one to issue the decree. Number two, the ruling was to be issued in such a way that the king could never be able to make peace again with Vashti, ever. Preventing a situation where Mukhan would be blamed and hated by both Ahasuerus and Vashti should they desire to get back together again. Mukhan did this by not leaving it as a verbal decree, but he said even let it be incorporated into the constitutions of Persia and Media and not be transgressed, i.e. he wants it to be irrevocable. And number three, he didn't write the decree that Vashti should be executed, which prevents the king from hating him later because he misses Vashti. He says, if it wasn't for that no good Mukhan, I would never have killed her. But it was written in the decree that simply implies a death sentence while not explicitly stating it. It said that Vashti never again appear before the king. That in effect means she's going to die. With that very careful, diplomatic, politically correct language, he ensured that his suggestion would not be used against him at some later time when he himself would seek a reprieve from the king. Let's say if he needed a favour, then the king turns and goes, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have even killed my beautiful wife, Vashti. I'm not going to help you. He doesn't want that. He needs to ascend the political ranks. So he wants the king to feel as if he's done it himself. Isn't that amazing? That, look at the words, that the king hand over her royal station to another who is better than she. Better than she. Hatoiv mimena. What's these words? Better than she. Better than Vashti. The king should hand over her royal... She only got the status, the queen, because she was married to you. So anyone that she marries is now going to become the queen, right? Well, who should you give it to? You should give it to a woman of by her own virtues is worthy of it. Hatoiv mimena literally means whose goodness stems from her. Vashti was a woman who was telling everyone about her royal roots, and she says that's why she can refuse the king's order. So you can say, the king should not be distressed by thinking that Vashti's successor might also turn out to be evil. Because even though you say she may just be another, she's bound to be good, and the assurance will come mimena, from within her. Whoever is the successor will hear about Vashti, hear what trouble Vashti got into by standing on her own corner, as it were, and saying how great she was. She'll never behave like that again, because whoever you're going to marry as number two is going to learn out how number one met her fate, and therefore she's never going to end up doing the same problem. So it'll come from within her to be quiet and not poke her nose into business which shouldn't have been her own, like Vashti did. It's verse 19. This is all the slick diplomacy of Mukhan trying to maneuver the queen off the chessboard. He's taking the queen with his bishop or whatever, his advisor, so he can better place himself on the chessboard of the political hierarchy of Persia and Media. And he needs the king to think as if he's the one that's taking the queen off the board. Look at verse Chof. Pasukov. And the king's mandate to be enacted will be heard throughout all his kingdom. Ki rabahi, great though it is. Why do I need those words? I know it's 127 provinces. And all the women will give respect to their husbands. Lemigdoil va'ad koton. From great all the way down to small. Even the most humble weaver will now have respect in his house when he hears about what you've done with Vashti. Wow, you've really sorted this country out, Your Highness. I'm so impressed with your ability to organize Shalom Bais in all areas of the realm. That's how Mamuchan is selling this to Achashverosh. What's great though it is there? We know he's got 127 provinces. Really, that expression is referring to the queen. Ki rabba he means really great though she is. He is her. Who is he, right? He, great though she is. Mamuchan is saying to Achashverosh very slyly, I told you that you shouldn't honor Vashti with a royal title, but only call her by her personal name. Nevertheless, when word gets out that the king has imposed such a sentence upon her, people will say, my goodness gracious me, Vashti? Such a great, distinguished queen in her own right, daughter of King Belshazzar, daughter of King Nebuchadnezzar, chief of staff of Sancheirov. Despite that, Achashverosh has even power over such a woman. Great though she is, Achashverosh must be even greater, because how could he have power over someone so great unless he was greater? It magnifies your honor, my king. People say, wow, you know, that means, let's say you got a woman, a Persian woman, who married a Persian man, who for whatever reason, social status wise, he is lower than she is. She's of a greater, I don't know, she's upper class and he's middle class. She's from the aristocracy and he's middle class. And she may feel quite rightly that she is superior to him in class order. Nonetheless, says Mamuchan, great though she is, referring to Vashti, every man should be the master of his own home. Irrelevant of the level of the man prior to the marriage, the minute you get married, the woman should be subordinate to the man, whoever he is. That's the message he wants to send to all 127 provinces. Amazing, no? So he wants to say, look, if Vashti, who's so great, made such a mistake with a king, and look where that led her, all the more so should a great woman who's married a lowlier man give honour to her husband. Okay, that was Pasuk Chof. Now that was Mamuchan's, essentially Mamuchan's slippery sail is verses 19 and 20. Now we're into verse 21. How did Achashverosh hear all this? How did he respond? Ooh. The matter pleased the king and the ministers, and the king did according to Mamuchan's word. How interesting. However, careful reading of this pasuk reveals quite a lot. Remember, he was number 7 in the rank. If you look at pasuk Yud Dalad, that was 14. Verse 14, if we go back there, and it said, you know, it was in the, they called for Vashti to come out naked, and he said, bring her out. And who were the 7 advisors, the special advisors that were closest to the king? That was Karshna, Shesa, Admosa, Tarshish, Meres, Marsna, and Mamuchan. That's the list in verse 14 of the 7 top advisors. It went in order of pecking order. And Mamuchan is right at number 7 there. Now that's interesting. The other wise men who knew the times specifically all those listed in Yudalit, Karshanar, Shesar, etc., they were present, but they weren't consulted. The matter pleased only the king and his ministers of the provinces. But the wise men, the other six, didn't approve of sentencing Vashti to death. This is a silly thing to do, they held. And they also knew Mamukhan was only doing this to elevate himself among their ranks and in order to promote himself above them, like Himmler had to promote himself above the German army. The German army was loyal to Germany. Himmler made something called the SS, which was loyal only to Hitler, Yimach Shemai. So he needed to get his way in so he could have his wicked way with the Jews. That's what he wanted to do. So he had to bypass the standard power structure of the country. Now, these other six knew this is a stupid plan that everyone's going to think is idiotic, but the king didn't even bother to question the other six clever, wise people that were part of his cabinet. Only the ministers of the 127. The king disregarded their opinion in deference to the ministers of the provinces, which was a silly thing to do. And even though the advice of Mamukhan was a minority opinion of 6 to 1 against, and he was the lowest ranking of all of his colleagues, it says the Pasuk V'yasa Melech Dvar Mamukhan, but the king did according to the word of Mamukhan and not the other six. This is a big promotion for Mamukhan, that suddenly he gets the king's ear and he's doing... Notice, Mamukhan didn't speak to the other six. Mamukhan didn't bother to ask the opinion of the other six, although they would have all ruled against him. But despite that fact, even though his colleagues were of a high rank, the king did according to Mamukhan's word. Now, this is very interesting. It's Mamukhan who's getting rid of Vashti, not realizing he's opening the door to Esther, who's going to end up killing him. Amazing! And Ahasuerus just have acted with a little bit of sechel and said, you know what? You know, just let me ask the other six first. He wouldn't have put Vashti to death. He would have left Vashti there. That would have been more problematic for the Jews. Look at 22. Look at 22. Okay. An edict is now being sent. He sent letters, Vayishlach Sforim, El Kol Medina Yisamelech, El Medina Medina. He sent letters to all the provinces of the kingdom. Now listen to this. Each province in its own script. The way I like to... Have you ever been to a pharmacist or a doctor's or a council and there's like a sign up in English, Gujarati, Arabic, Urdu, Polish? You know what I mean? That gives chashivas to each script. Rather than saying, look, you're in England, you learn English. You go to Israel, the signs are in Ivrit, in English, and Arabic. You know what I'm saying? There are three different scripts. Each got its own script. Each, all 127, they were written out and translated according to their script. And to each people in its own language. To the effect that every man should rule in his own home and speak the language of his people. You should speak your own languages and you should celebrate your own cultures, says Mamukhan and Ahasuerus. Which sounds very modern, does it not? Happened a long time ago, 3406. It's a long time. The Gemara Megillah, Yud Beis, Omud Beis, which you constantly keep referring back to, says that Ahasuerus' instruction was that every man should rule in his own home, was perceived by the masses as totally meaningless. Imagine you got a letter from Boris Johnson saying it's only right that a husband should rule in his own home. Well, and so, you know, because you get this COVID thing, at the beginning of lockdown, you got a letter saying stay home by Boris Johnson. I don't know if you got that. That's your letter from Boris Johnson saying stay home. Johnson says, while you're there, make sure you're the boss. You've got to wear the trousers in the family. Could you imagine what you'd do with that letter? I mean, it's a laugh. It's ridiculous. Say Chazal in the Gemara, this was a divine plan. What do you get from this? It was from the will of Hashem himself that such utter idiocy be posted to every home through 127 provinces. Why? So that Israel's enemies would not raise their hands against the Jews when the letters from Haman were sent out. Because Rashi explains, when they got the letter saying we're going to kill our enemies the next day, they treated that with the same circumspect nonsense about the last letter saying a husband should be the head in his own house. Just like there was idiocy coming out of the royal house, you know, last year. Why should you know? It's the same thing. He starts saying, be prepared for your enemies in a cryptic way. You know, like, what does that mean? Oh, for goodness sake. So it was quite easy to undo, because we know there's always nonsense coming from Westminster. Do you know what I'm saying? That was the feeling on the street. And that was important. Otherwise, they would have taken Haman's letters far more seriously. Since the first decree was so silly, essentially all 127 provinces now considered Ahasuerus a total imbecile. And therefore, they didn't rush to carry out his next decree. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Notice it was Memuchan, who was Haman himself, who organized this farce, and it backfired in his face that when he sends his own next decree to kill the Jews, no one's going to believe him. It's him that's telling the king to write this drivel. And the king's writing, going, oh, you know what? You should be the man of the house. That's Haman's pen moving on the paper. It's him doing this decree. And that's going to make sure that his next decree to kill the Jews is seen as idiotic. He himself is shooting himself in the foot about his own decree against the Jews that he's cooking up later. Amazing, no? It's interesting that the Alshech says that Ahasuerus thought that by merely reading about the order imposed upon Vashti, merely hearing that Queen Vashti could be relegated or even executed in such a way for insolence would terrify the women, and all the women would be incapable of grasping that all husbands must be respected. The women could have claimed, Ahasuerus' case is not like ours. How can a general rule be made from the king's situation that every wife in all of the provinces must respect their husbands? Because Vashti was descended from such an illustrious lineage that when Ahasuerus, and even though it was silly, she should have respected her husband, he had the power to execute her. And so she was silly for doing that. But our husbands don't have the power to execute us if we're naughty. They don't say, you know, we can get hanged if that's the case. Therefore, why would he think that all the men are going to suddenly think they're masters in their own home just because of what happened in his house? That's why everyone thought it was silly. Even the women thought it was silly. Even though, you know, I've got to submit myself to my husband. If I don't, what's he going to do? Nothing. That's not the same with Ahasuerus. So Ahasuerus wanted to clearly convey to such women thinking this, that he sent letters to each province in its own script, rather than the script of the royal province, rather than the Queen's English. In that way, he was saying that he was a ruler over many different countries, but he nonetheless considered each people to possess their dominion over their right to their own territory. There's 127 provinces which had kind of devolved powers, which they had like a council in. And he gave that chashivas. Since those letters that he sent out were to go into everyone's home ground, where people would have their own authorities, he wanted to honour those regions by having the letters written in the local language, and it would become apparent that every man should rule in his house, in his own home. And Ahasuerus felt as follows. Just as Vashti had been punished for transgressing her husband's will, so every woman should be subservient to her husband's will. See, he made like a kal v'chomer. It's a logical argument. I'm not sure what it's called in legal. Modern law, I think it's called an a fortiori argument. I don't know if I've got that right. It's a all the more so argument. Here's the argument. Here's the kal v'chomer. Here it goes. Here's what Ahasuerus thought. If me, the king, had lowered myself in order to honor all of my subjects in their own homes. I'm stepping over the threshold of your home and I'm honoring you in your own language and your own script and your own culture. How much more so if the king is honoring you? Should a wife honor her husband in his own home? If I've got to honor you and I'm the king and I'm honoring you, how much more so does your wife have to honor you in your home? That was his Kal Vachomer. That's what he thought people would take from this. Even though your wife might be a distinguished daughter, she still got to be subservient to her husband in her own home. Thus, what do we learn out? The king was bestowing honor upon every subject in his own home. I'm honoring you. Kal Vachomer, your wife should honor you. Now, what did he mean by putting it in its own script, in its own language? Because he wanted to say like this. If a woman, let's say in Persian Media, it was joined, right? Let's say a man married a Median woman and he was Persian. What's Ahasuerus saying? He's saying, I married a woman who was a Chaldean. She was Vashti from Chaldea, but I myself am Persian. But she had to submit to me even though she was a Chaldean, which is a greater kingdom than Persia. So too, if your wife is from Persia or from Media and you're from another country, she should speak in your language, in your script. That's why, look at the Pasuk. It says in the Pasuk, it says, every man should rule in his own home, listen to this, and speak the language of his own people. He's making a minug that if a woman marries a man who speaks a different language, it's incumbent upon the woman to learn the language of her husband, and he takes rule in cultural affairs. It's a bit similar to a Sephardi woman marrying an Ashkenazi man, that she takes on his minhagim, right? That the culture of the man overrules the culture of the woman. And that was the edict. That's the end of the first perek of Megillah. Are you okay for me to do a Medrash Rabbah and go into the second perek? Or do you have any questions on anything we've done so far? Okay, here we go. We're now about to start the second perek of Megillah Esther. But before we do that, I'd like to read you a Medrash Rabbah from Esther Medrash Rabbah, and it's Parsha Hay, that's portion 5, Ois Gimel, point 3. And it says there, and let the king appoint commissioners in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they gather together every maiden of beautiful appearance in Shushan. That's what's coming up next. Now we've got to find a wife for the king. We're going to have a beauty pageant from everyone all over the 127 provinces, right? So the Medrash says as follows. Ma ra'a, what did God see fit to subjugate the women of Ahasuerus' kingdom to such a humiliation? Out of nowhere, could you imagine? In your town, there's beautiful women in your town. And these women are just getting on with their lives, getting on with their jobs. Suddenly now each one is in fear. They're going to be picked up by a police van and taken off to another country to take part in a Miss World beauty pageant against their will in order to find a pleasing queen for Ahasuerus now that Memuchan has told him to get rid of Vashti. What? That's a gezeirah on 127 provinces. That's a lot of people in the world. It's the majority of the world. All the women, all the beautiful daughters all have to be soaked up by some kind of police force that, throw them into the back of a police wagon and drive them off somewhere against their will to a detention centre. Why did a Kodesh Baruch Hu allow that to happen to Gentiles? Why did he allow that? That's horrible. Amazing, no? Says Rabbi Huna in the Medrash. Why? It's because the girls of the kingdom would demean all the daughters of Israel by calling them ugly. All the Gentile women would take it upon themselves to find a Jewish girl and berate her for being disgusting. and by saying that nobody paid attention to them. The Jews are worthless rats, like vermin. They're ugly, disgusting rats. That's what they would be called in the street. What was going on in the ghettos with the Nazis? The Jews were vilified. Look how badly they were treated. Seen literally as a vermin. Says Rav Chanina, he says, in the name of Rabbi Levi, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, if a Jew, listen to this, if a Jew and a non-Jew lived together in one courtyard, they shared a courtyard, they had two houses backing onto a shared courtyard, a chotzer, and the Jew set his pot on the fire, he put his pot on a fire to cook, and it happened that the non-Jewish neighbor touched it by accident, he moved the pot. The pot's fine. The Jew would eat it. He wouldn't say that's treif. And he'd eat it. If, however, the non-Jew had a pot or a barbecue in his garden, and by accident the Jew touched the pot that had goyish food cooking into it, the guy would say, this pot is tamay. This pot has been contaminated with impurity, and he'd throw away all the food in it. Even if, listen to this, even if, says the Medrash, a number of insects or disgusting creeping creatures like maggots would fall into the pot of the non-Jew, he would still eat it. He doesn't care. It's, you know, high in protein. It's high in protein, you know, worms are high in protein. But if the Jew were to make his own food in the non-Jew's pot, the non-Jew would regard the pot as contaminated and he'd smash it. That's how disgusting and filthy the Jews were seen by the Persians. Ugly vermin. It's like a neo-Nazi campaign of vilification in the Jews that was going on in Ahasuerus' time. So why does the Medrash see God's hand at work more than the other details of the Purim story? Right here, indeed, the Medrash says, Ma'ra'ah, what did God see? It doesn't say that anywhere else in the story. How come here with the beauty pageant, more than anything else, we see God's hand at work in the Medrash Rabbah? So the Teferis Tzion says that the premise of the Medrash is teaching us that whenever the Megillah uses the term king without saying Ahasuerus, refers to Hashem. And when Ahasuerus acquiesced to the suggestion to where it says made to the king, he was doing so as the agent of Hashem himself. So it says, why did he see fit to have all the maidens from the entire empire brought to him? If God's purpose was actually to have Esther installed as the new queen, replacing Vashti, it would have just been enough that the maidens from Shushan alone would have been brought in. Take them all from London. Why do you need to get girls from the Highlands? If they're in the capital, for goodness sake, there's not enough girls in London for you. Pick one. You just need one. And anyway, Esther's in Shushan. She's in London. So just scour London if Esther's the only target from Shemayim. Wherever Esther lived, that's where it should happen. That's how we organised it. Why do you have to get 127 provinces involved when only Esther's the key? Says Rav Huna, it was a Kodesh Baruch Hu's retribution to the fair ones, the beautiful girls of the Persian Empire for having constantly denigrating and vilifying the daughters of Israel as ugly. And saying, you stink, you're horrible, you're disgusting, you're Jewish. Their beauty now became their undoing. As any beautiful girl was taken off to the king's harem, never to go back to her family and lead a normal life again. While the Jewishness they had denigrated, they said, oh, Jewish girls are ugly. She became the queen and they had to end up living as prisoners in the harem for the rest of their lives. Isn't that amazing? All the pretty girls that would gang up on the Jewish girls, saying how ugly the Jewish girls were, their prettiness got them into trouble. Now they're pretty, they get thrown into a hoolie wagon, driven off to some detention somewhere, put in a harem for the rest of their lives, and the Jewish girl that they always said was ugly, she's the most beautiful girl, she's the queen. Isn't that unbelievable? That's a Teferis Tzion on the Medrash. Let's look at chapter 2, verse 1. Achar HaDvarim, after this whole thing with the party and the neo-Nazi way of ripping the Jews against their creator by dressing up the party so their eyes look down, getting them to drink avoid Azara wine, doing znus, having Vashti do the women, having Haman and Achashverosh do the men, getting them all to sin, getting them all to decree, then Vashti, after all that, the wrath of King Achashverosh had subsided. He started to forget about the anger of the whole matter with Vashti. And he started to remember her in a fond, melancholic way where he pined for her. He remembered Vashti, what she had done and what had been decreed against her. Now, this is really important. What does it mean, he remembered her? Again, the Gemara Megillah Yud Beis Amud Beis, 12b, says, remember, at the king's banquet, all the Persian and Median ministers, that it was a bit merry. It said, you know, his heart was happy with wine. It wasn't shikah, but it was very lubricated. You know what I'm saying? There was quite a lot of alcohol being downed. And the Median and Persian ministers became engaged, says the Gemara, in an obscene conversation about their wives. And some said that Median women are more beautiful than the Persian women. There was always a bit of jousting. It's like the English and the French. There was always a bit of jousting between Persian media because it was a social structure that had joined together for political reasons. But each one thought each one was better. So the Medians thought their women are prettier than the Persian women. Well, I've got news for you. The Persian men thought the Persian women are beautiful. Oh, it started to become a bit of a heated debate. And Achashverosh was watching this, much to his glee. And he said, ha, you're all wrong. I'll tell you the most beautiful women are Chaldean women. Oh, they're the best. And now they can't say that because they're Persians and Medians, right? And he had married a Chaldean woman. So they said, well, how do we know? So he says, well, do you want to see? Do you want to see how beautiful she is? They said, yeah. So that's when he ordered for her to come out naked. Now you can understand what's going on when it says, when the wrath of King Achashverosh. You see, that was caused, remember, he was a very fickle, sensitive kind of person. If anyone wouldn't do what he wanted immediately, he flew off into a rage. The fact that you even said no to him was good enough to demand a death sentence. That's the kind of spoiled person he was. But that's subsided now. That's in the past. He calmed down. He's not thinking about that anymore. And he remembered her. He remembered the woman of whom he used to boast about how pretty she was. That her beauty was much more than the Persians and the Medians. And he's lost her. He's had her killed out of his own idiocy. And he thought, you know what? She did, at the end of the day, not do what I told her to do. But it wasn't worthy of a death sentence. And you know, when Memuchan came up to me and he said, I couldn't stand up because he said he made it all this importance. It's got to be part of the Constitution. It's a political faux pas. It's a national embarrassment. But I remembered, you know, I really liked her. I really loved Vashti. And he remembered what she had done. In fact, the fact that she didn't turn up, we learnt out last week, was a good thing for him. Because what would have happened if it were backfired? Treating her like that would have been no good for him or her. And indeed, she did him a favour. And she was being sneers. She was being modest. What a praiseworthy woman. So he couldn't really console himself over having lost her. And for not supporting her through the din with Memuchan and not doing more to spare her life. And really deep down, says the Medrash, he knew she was right now not to turn up. So that's why it says Vashti rather than Queen Vashti. She's not a queen anymore because we've stripped her of a royal title. He remembered Vashti, this woman who used to be the queen. And now he's pining for her. And that's why it says Queen Vashti, she was just like any other woman. But the decree against her was still unfair. It was still, even if she wasn't a queen, it was still wrong to be so harsh on her. He's now having melancholic feelings. He's starting to get sad. And due to his sadness, verse 2, then the king's attendants proclaimed, oh, don't worry, old king. Let there be sought for the king, for the beautiful young maidens. verse 3. And let the king appoint officers throughout all. Notice the word all, not just Shushan, from what we discussed earlier in the Medrash Rabbah, that this is going to affect all 127 world provinces. All his kingdom's provinces, that's Hodu ad Kush, that's all the way from India to Ethiopia, all the way and everyone in between, we're going to send all the pretty girls over and you'll feel much better. They gather every beautiful young maiden to Shushan, right here where you are, they should come to you, to the harem. They're going to now be imprisoned in a special city just for them, under the charge of Haggai, the king's chamberlain, the custodian of women, and let their cosmetics be applied. That's interesting. Why do we need to have their cosmetics applied? Verse 4, and let the girl who pleases the king, i.e. pick one from all the beauties in all the world, pick the best, and she'll become queen in Vashti's stead, i.e. she'll inherit the title queen by marriage to you alone, and she'll be in Vashti's stead in the fact that you won't feel sad, because you don't even know, you might get a better one. You thought Vashti was so nice, you might get a better girl. And the advice pleased the king, and he did so. Ooh, how interesting. So let's look now, verses 2-4. The king's attendants proclaimed to Ahasuerus. It's like this. You lost one woman. You lost one woman. Don't worry. We'll get you another one. There's more women in the, you know, there's more fish in the sea. We'll get you another one. And you can boast about her just like you boasted about Vashti to the Medians and the Persians at the party. You don't have any worry about, you know, melancholic regret. I'm never going to get one just as good as that. Yeah, you are. In fact, you're going to get better. Don't you worry. Interesting. Now, you might say that you still haven't found one as lovely as Vashti. You've looked through the whole world and there isn't a woman on earth that's as good as Vashti. But Vashti never appeared before you without being beautified with beautiful cosmetics and oiled, and she had perfumes and she smelt good, she looked good. She just come out the salon, you know what I mean? She never turned up till she just literally come out the hairdressers, you know what I'm saying? Therefore, what you should do is do the same to all these other women. Put them in the harem, give them beauty treatments, you know, suntan beds and I don't know, spray tans, I don't know, you name it. And then bring them before you and judge for yourself whether you like them. That's what it means to let their cosmetics be applied. And only afterwards let the girl who pleases the king come before in Vashti's stead. Once you've got a girl made up the same way Vashti was, then you too can pick Vashti up. In this girl, you can replace her in your mind. So it's interesting that the verse says something very interesting. It says, and let the girl who pleases the king become queen in Vashti's stead, rather than stating that the king should take her and marry her. That's to say that Ahasuerus put all those chosen to enter the beauty pageant under the charge of the king's chamberlain, the custodian of the king's women, and they became concubines for life. This is a privilege for those girls, it seems, in Ahasuerus' mind. They're now going to live a royal life, not with their family, not in their homes, not in their home country, but they're going to live in the palace forever as prisoners, but in a beautiful experience. And all of them will live there. All the girls are going to live like that. But one girl is going to have an extra privilege, and that's going to be enjoyed only by the girl who pleases the king, that she alone will become queen in Vashti's stead. So don't worry, we're going to be nice to all these girls. They're going to live a royal life for the rest of their life. But one girl is going to be even better than the rest. You've got all of this harem now for yourself, brand new harem. But one girl you could marry and you could replace Vashti. But all the others would still be wives to you. You're going to meet thousands of girls now. And they'll all enjoy the same favours and fringe benefits and privileges that goes along with being a wife of the king. But the royal title of queen, which is bestowed upon Vashti because she married you, not because she was a queen from Belshazzar and Nebuchadnezzar and all that. That will only go to one woman. And she will be the spitz, the best of the best, the creme de la creme. You'll pick her from all your new wives and you'll be super happy. Super happy. Rabbeisai, we're now at 2:5. This pasuk, possibly more than any other individual pasuk through the whole of Megillas Esther, is the pasuk that incites the most commentary, the most discussion, and the most mystical secrets. It's all in this one. I can't, you know, I've got like pages and pages of notes. I have to go just on this one verse. You know, I hope to be able to do this one pasuk with you next time. But let's just read it. Here's where we start kicking in. We even read this out. There was a man, Ishuhud, the high Shushanabira. There was a Jewish man, Shushanabira, Shmoy Mordechai, and his name was Mordechai, and he was the son of Yair, who was the son of Shimi, Ben Kish, who was the son of Kish. By the way, he was in the tribe of Benjamin, and Kish was Shaul's, the descendant of Saul's house, was from Kish. He's in the same mishpacha as Shaul HaMelech. He's from Sheva Benjamin. Ish Yemini. Ooh. Why do we need to know all this lineage? Why do we have to talk about Kish, who was the father of the house of Shaul HaMelech? Why are we even bringing that up? Who cares? Just say there was a guy called Mordechai. Why do we need to get that? Oh, son of who? Son of who? Oh, Ish Yemini is a Benjaminite. And what's Yemini got to do with Benjamin? What's this Yemini? What's Benjamin? Why have I got to know he's from Sheva Benjamin? Why have I got to know? All of these words have to be ploughed into with bulldozers. There's so much to be discussed. Everything about the whole reason we've got into this problem is now being sewn up. Much like, remember when we did Rus, and we started linking Rus herself with the daughter of Lot, and David HaMelech having to come through that, and what's going with Yehuda and Tamar, and Boaz was Yehuda, a Gilgul of Yehuda, and Rus is a Gilgul of the first daughter of Lot, and why they're all fixing up, and it's all the tying all knots off, you know what I mean? All loose ends. This is a tying up loose end pasuk. Very reminiscent of what we discussed in Rus. And it's all to do with the lineage of the Shvatim and Shaul HaMelech, and what's going on with Shevet Benjamin, which we've got to discuss. Lots and lots and lots going on. And all of this is coming out. And all the allusions in the Torah, which we'll go through, but Ezra Shemin, a Chumash next time, and in the Torah where it starts alluding to Megillas Esther, we've got to see. And then we've got to talk about Eliyahu and Moshe Rabbeinu and the decree written in blood or in mud. Everything comes out of this pasuk. This is the crux pasuk. You've got to get this pasuk. And therefore, I can't start it now, but at least we've looked at it. And for Ezra Shem, next time, we will start chapter 2, verse 5. And we'll go into the history of the Shvatim and where Mordechai fits in on this and why he's there. Why Hashem wants some Dafka from Shevet Benjamin to get involved. What's going on? This obviously is harking back to something even earlier than the sin of bowing down of the idol of Nebuchadnezzar. When we're talking about Shevet Benjamin and all these, this is going back way earlier to the times of the Melachim, times of the Jewish kings. We need to discuss all this. So Be'ezer Shem will enter that extravaganza next time. And if there's any questions or anything we've done up to here, I'm very happy to hear it. In the meantime, I wish you a wonderful week and a wonderful Shabbos. If there's any questions, now's the time.